if you work on your craft and your focus and you're making stuff that you love and you're putting it out there, people will come to you. Like, you don't need to reach out and like find, you know, and try to get into places. Like, they will come to you. And that's what I've done. Like, I just, I'm so passionate about, you know, designing, working with the artisans, that I put my sort of energy into that. And then all the press that I've got after that and the stores that I'm selling to has been people finding me.
Do you love your business? You should, right? Well, sometimes we just don't. It's my hope that this, the My Daily Business Coach podcast, helps you regain a little of that lost love by providing tips and tactics, tools, insights, inspiration, all the good stuff to help you actually enjoy running your business. In addition to actionable tips and tactics that you'll be able to execute immediately, you'll also hear from creative small business owners around the world who've been able to sidestep the hustle and build a business that merges their passion with their purpose and provides a profit. I'm your host, Fiona Kalacki, founder of My Daily Business Coach. Let's get going. Hello and welcome to episode 194 of the My Daily Business Coach podcast. Oh my goodness, we're only six episodes short of 200 episodes. Oh my goodness. If somebody had told me a couple of years ago I'd be up to episode 200 and I would have stuck with this podcast and what it would do for my business, oh my gosh, I just may have not believed them. But firsthand, I can say that having a podcast has been absolutely incredible for my business, for myself, for my connections. It's just, oh, I love it. So if you are somebody who would love to start a podcast, please know that I have put everything that we have learned into a short course, How to Start a Podcast, which you can find at mydailybusinesscoach.com/podcast. All right. So today it is a small business interview and I'm chatting with somebody who is just really interesting, super, super interesting. Actually connected with them through Instagram, totally random, just came across, I think maybe in the Explore tab, their work and just fell in love with it and was like, oh my goodness, I need to talk to you. Before we get stuck into that, I just want to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians on the beautiful land on which I record this podcast, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And I pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge that sovereignty has never been ceded. And I also pay my respects to any other Indigenous people who might be tuning in and listening to this from around the world. Welcome. The other thing I wanted to mention before I get stuck into this lovely interview with my guest today is the Marketing for Your Small Business course and coaching program. That is a 9-week live coaching program with myself where you work through the Marketing for Your Small Business online course. And that goes into everything that I've learned over 20 years being in marketing, working in senior marketing roles for places like Country Road Group, Audible, and Amazon. So if you're interested in that, check out marketingforyoursmallbusiness.com or you can find it at mydailybusinesscoach.com/marketing. So that kicks off in 2 weeks if you're listening to this in real time, on the 26th of April, and it runs every single week for 9 weeks. And if you are not from Australia, please don't let that be a deterrent. We've definitely had people from the US, from the UK, from Europe, from New Zealand, different parts of Asia that have come into it. So it is at 9 a.m. or 9:30. It's at 9:30 a.m. Australian time, Melbourne time. But we have had people definitely join. Some people will just watch the replays and send us their questions in between so that I can answer those live on the call. But yeah, if you don't have to be in Australia to be part of this, you just have to have good internet access. All right. So on with today's small business interview. My guest today is the wonderful Leah Singh from leahsingh.com. Leah Singh is a beautiful craft, texture, and color brand. And I came across Leah on Instagram. I think I was just looking for something else. And I don't know if it was through like a hashtag or on the Explore tab, you know, just based on, I guess, other things that I'm looking at. And the homewares was just beautiful, really standing out as well in colorful, bold prints, these beautiful textures made in India. And I just fell in love with it. And I contacted Leah on the off chance that she might actually want to be on a podcast in Australia. And she got back to me and was like, yes, I would love to. And Leah at that time was splitting her time between New York and India. She is originally from India and she grew up in India and then moved to New York to study industrial design at Parsons School of Design. And she was surrounded there by kind of minimal lines and sort of Western architecture. And then she created this incredible brand that merges both the kind of upbringing that she's had in India and also the sort of architecture and the clean lines and minimalism that she sort of fell in love with when she was in New York and other parts of the West. So she splits her time now between New York and Delhi. And when I spoke to her, she was in Delhi. She had just come back from New York. And it was really interesting. She said, I needed a bit of a break. Everything was just a bit hectic in Delhi. So I went to New York for a break. And I thought, my goodness, most people do not go to New York. It's not necessarily seen as like a calming place. So I loved that even instantly. As soon as she said that, I was like, okay, I'm learning so much about you. So I had to get Leah on the podcast to talk about, you know, what has it been like living between two cultures and creating a brand that merges those? And what has it been like throughout the pandemic, not being able to travel as much as she was used to? And also, like, how did the education at Parsons influence what she does now? So I absolutely love this chat with Leah. I can't wait for her pieces to come to Australia. She actually does ship to Australia. But yes, there might be some exciting news, which I won't say any more about. Because I instantly was sort of saying to her, my goodness, you need to be stocked over here. You were just, people would love your brand here. And it was a really lovely conversation that we had. So here it is. And I hope it very much inspires you, regardless of where you're at in your journey with business. My interview with Leah Singh, the founder of Leah Singh. Hello, Leah. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you are so welcome. I'm wondering how you are feeling today. And also, if you can tell us where you're actually talking to me from.
I just got back to India, to Delhi from New York after being away for 7 weeks. So I got back on Friday night and I'm excited to be back, but very jet lagged.
Yeah, I can imagine it. Yeah. What, first thing your Monday morning?
Yeah, it is. It's almost 9 a.m. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for getting up and doing this podcast with jet lag
as well. Of course. So excited to be here.
Oh, no, I'm excited to have you. I was just saying in the intro just now that, you know, I absolutely love your business. I found it through Instagram and I would love to know a bit more about it. So, you know, how did you start it? Why did you start it? And when did you start this?
So for my senior thesis at Parsons in New York, we had to do a project that was like a good life. So we had to do something that would help a community. And what I wanted to do was work with artisans in India. But my project was using bone, which is a byproduct of other industries. And it was introduced to replace ivory because ivory was banned in the 1980s. So they started using bone to make products, and that since it was a byproduct, they weren't killing any animals for the bone. And so I was making jewelry from that. And so after I graduated and I came back to India, I thought I would start my business making bone jewelry. And I actually did that for a while. While I was in India, I was going to all these craft markets and there were so many textiles, so many different techniques from different parts of India. And I was really drawn to the colors and the textures and the different techniques. Like there was embroidery techniques, but there were different ones from each region in India. And then there was printing and weaving. And then I slowly started to dabble in that. I started with Kantha embroidery, actually. And then as I started doing that, I just felt like I was enjoying myself working with color way more than with the bone. So I slowly shifted then to doing textiles. And the reason that I wanted to work with artisans only was that while I was doing my senior thesis and, you know, trying to identify which craft I wanted to work with, I found that a lot of the crafts in India are slowly dying out because the younger generation doesn't want to, you know, sit and either do embroidery or weaving, like these very labor intensive jobs when they can be moving to cities and working in an office. And so these crafts are slowly dying out, and the artisans who are doing them now, like once they retire, then, you know, it's not really being carried on. So I wanted to work with these artisans to support their craft and sort of keep it going as long, you know, and as long as they're around, and also to market it to a different clientele, because a lot of the stuff that they were making and still make is very, it's the same kind of stuff that they've been making for years. So I wanted to sort of transform that into something modern and market it to a different customer base. And yeah, that's how I sort of came to doing textiles.
Oh, wow. What a story. And so do you still sell or make any bone jewelry, or is that completely finished now?
It's completely finished now. I still have it. And I feel like at some point I want to, you know, put that stuff out there and sell the stock that I have. But right now it's just been the textiles.
Yeah. Wow. That is beautiful. And I guess, like, you know, you see Indian textiles around and you think, I don't know, you just think it's a big industry and surely it must just keep going and going and going. But it makes total sense when you say, well, these other people, you know, that are young, kind of coming up, are like, well, I don't want to do that. Yeah. So it's great that there are businesses like yours that are, you know, employing companies to keep doing that. And we're seeing like a huge resurgence, I feel like, well, not resurgence, but, you know, Indian textiles are just incredible and intricate. And, you know, obviously these are these incredible artisans. Did you like know people that were in the industry, or was it purely through the markets that you found the makers?
It was mostly through the markets, because they have these markets in Delhi where they bring artisans from villages across India, and then they bring their, what each artisan group is, you know, makes, like whether it's some embroidery technique or if it's some paintings from a specific region, they all come to Delhi to sell all these different beautiful products. So that's where I met some of them. And then some of the artisans, like it would just be like someone I know or an acquaintance would connect me with someone who would connect me with someone else. And then I met the artisan. So it's, none of them work in factories. It's all, you know, all the artisans work from home, and it's all using traditional Indian embroidery and weaving and printing techniques.
Wow, it is so beautiful. And your work is just so beautiful. And I'll get onto that more in a second. But you touched on the fact that you've just come back from New York and that you kind of studied there. Obviously, we're still in a pandemic, and I know that that has just meant so many people are separated from loved ones. Mm-hmm. As someone who has spent time in the US and India, how did you move through the challenges? I mean, especially there was a huge amount of heartache and just the stuff that we were seeing, at least on our screens in Australia, about India during the pandemic was heartbreaking. I mean, just the population alone and being hit by a pandemic. Can you talk us through how it's been for you as somebody who's lived between two places going through this pandemic, and also how the pandemic has affected you with your business as well as personally?
So when the pandemic started, everything, you know, we went into lockdown like immediately in India. So it was very uncertain. And we actually, like, I remember in my neighborhood, we'd have like this whole battalion of police cars and police come through to make sure no one was outside and, you know, everyone was staying home. And it was just very scary and uncertain. And because I work with artisans who work from home, they're not working in a factory, they were just continuing to work. So if they had orders with them from before, they were able to continue working. So in some way that was good for them, because, you know, that's their source of income. So if they continue to work, then once they're ready to ship the products to the buyer, whether it's me or anyone else that they work with, then they'll get their income. But what was difficult for everyone was that if you didn't already have something that you're working on, there was no way to start a new order. There was no way for me to like send new orders, because they weren't able to access, you know, getting more materials or dyeing the yarns, even shipping, because everything had stopped. So in the beginning in India, there were such few cases because of the lockdown that they did immediately, that I feel like people were still safe and okay and not getting sick and were able to continue working if they were, you know, like the artisans that I work with. But after a few months, especially in 2021, in April and May, it got really bad. The, you know, people had, the lockdown had ended, people had started going out again, and the cases were going up, like they were increasing so much each day, and it was very scary. People like the artisans, some of them that I work with, they were, you know, they got very sick, they ended up in hospital, and it was just extremely stressful, depressing, like all the stories that we were hearing, that of people going to hospitals and there were no beds, so they were being not allowed to come in, and then people were just going from hospital to hospital looking for a bed to get the care that they needed. So it was extremely stressful and depressing, and there was like nothing anyone could really do because no one was able to go out, you know, fear of getting sick. And then I wasn't able to travel for 2 years, so I didn't see my family in the US. So that was very difficult as well. And in terms of the business, I would say we didn't get affected as much, except for shipping. Like, shipping had also stopped. Like, UPS, FedEx, they were only shipping medicines and vaccines and things like that. They weren't taking any, you know, any like commercial goods. So even when the pandemic started, we were getting a lot of orders, but we weren't able to ship anything for a few months.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, so that was really stressful because, you know, we were worried that people would start canceling their orders because we weren't, you know, we hadn't shipped in a few months. So what I did notice during the pandemic was that customers have become much more patient. I think because everyone was in this together and experiencing these difficulties, challenges, and, you know, delays with everything, that we didn't get orders canceled because everyone was okay to wait, and they knew that, you know, we were also having difficulties on our end. So that was really sort of comforting, knowing that they were supporting us through whatever challenges we were facing in terms of the delays.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I remember just watching about India, and it was just heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. And how is India now? I mean, obviously I'm not like, I'll be a spokesperson for the whole country, but do you feel like, you know, things have opened up? Are people relatively, you know, I know there's a huge amount of vaccination there, like are people relatively feeling okay about things now?
Yeah, everything is kind of more or less open. Everyone is sort of out and about. People still wear masks, but they're slowly, you know, removing the mask mandate. Like, you had to wear your mask in the car. So now you don't have to if you're in your own car. But things are still not smooth, like in terms of like with work. There's still delays with certain supply chains, like getting materials, and the cost of everything has gone up. All materials, labor, like the cost of everything has gone up. So that started during the pandemic, and it's just kind of, you know, gone up increasingly over the last 2 years. So that has also been a bit of a challenge. But yeah, things are open. The number of cases are very low all over India, but it still doesn't feel like things are, you know, like normal because of the delays and because of, you know, things. There are times when things close in certain areas because they, you know, there'll be like an increase in cases. So then they sort of lock down. So it's very kind of, it's not smooth.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yes, I can. I mean, I just feel like everything around the world is just not smooth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, oh my goodness. Well, I hope things get better soon. But the other thing I wanted to ask is, you know, your pieces are just beautiful. That is what stopped me on Instagram. I was like, oh my gosh, these are just a delight on the senses. They're bold and colorful, yet like still they're quite structured and timeless. And I love also, and you're very clear about this on your website as well, is that you are, you know, you say I'm equally passionate about social and environmental responsibility. Mm-hmm. A lot of small business owners listen to this podcast who are in a similar space, homewares or textiles or designing products somewhere. Has it been harder than you thought or easier than you thought to create pieces that, you know, not only look beautiful, but also are made well and made in an ethical way?
It's been, I guess, easier than I thought because my whole goal was to work directly with the artisans so that there was transparency in, you know, the working conditions, the wages and all of that. Like initially when I'd actually started, I didn't know how to reach the artisans directly. So I thought that I would have to work with organizations that work with these artisan groups. So that's how I sort of started to get into it, and then found that, you know, they were charging a lot of money, but I didn't know where that money was going. I didn't have access to the artisans. I wasn't able to sit with them to like develop things. So I felt like there wasn't transparency. I didn't really know what was going on. So that's when I, you know, started to reach out to them directly to ensure that there is transparency and I know, you know, what's going on. So it's actually been easy because I know that the artisans are working from home. They're not coming to a factory where, you know, they might be, you know, dangerous or unhygienic conditions. A lot of the artisans we work with are women, you know, then traveling to like a factory would be, you know, could be dangerous. So they, since they work from home, they are able to take care of their children while also working on their craft. So it hasn't been difficult just because I've been able to have that transparency.
I love that. And I think that there's a lesson in that for anyone who's listening to, like, you don't always have to go through a middleman kind of, you know, kind of look at other options really. And obviously, and we touched on it before with the US and India, but you made this move to study. Was that the first time that you'd moved to the US or had you lived there previously?
I had lived there like during high school. I went to boarding school in the US for a year and a half. So I lived there and my father is American. So his side of the family lives in the US and my brother and sister had moved there when I was still 4 years old. They're much older than me. So, they're all there. So I visited. I also lived there during high school. So going there for college was like, I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Okay. So even with that sort of, you know, familial support that is there for you, it is still hard to move to another country. I have done it. I moved to London, which is very similar to Australia. So it's, you know, it's really similar. Whereas I would imagine that India and the US, there's a lot of differences. And it's not as, and I loved actually before we started recording when you said, I just went to New York to get away from all the craziness. And I was like, New York seems to be a hectic place. But for anyone who's listening, was there anything that you could offer in terms of advice for people that might be thinking that they'd like to make a move to another country, whether that country is very similar or whether that country is quite different? Was there anything that you would maybe not do again or anything that really, really helped outside of the family support? Because I know, you know, the pandemic is still on us, but a lot of people are now, because things are lifting and restrictions are lifting, are thinking, oh, okay, maybe I'll move to that country and work for a while. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just wondering your advice on that since you've done it.
I feel like when I went, even though I had that familial support, I sort of went in and what I just wanted to do was to get really familiar with local, you know, everything local. So it was really helpful to meet people who are from the area and then really, yeah, I have, even when I'm traveling, just for like on holiday and I'm going to a new country, my goal always is to like get a sense of what the local feel is, you know, how the people live, what kind of food do they eat, what the culture is like. So that's, even though I've been to New York and lived near New York, I still didn't have that sense of like complete local feeling. So that's what I wanted. And I feel like once you like immerse yourself in that, it's so much easier and nicer and like faster to feel like home when you feel like you are part of the local, I guess, the people and everything that's going on. So I think it's important to, like, if you can, like, have someone you know that's from there who can like show you how things work in that place. That's what was really helpful for me. My best friend in college was from New Jersey, but she knew New York really well. And then we were, you know, we would do all the local things and I felt like I became like a true New Yorker.
Yeah. I love that. And I think that's really, like, that's such a good point because, like, when I lived in London twice, I was born over there. But I definitely knew a lot of friends who moved to London. Australians, a lot of Australians go to London. It's just like a, I don't know, passage that you go through as a younger person. But I feel like a lot of Australians also go to London and just hang out with other Australians. And I think it, and I made a really conscious decision the second time I went to be like, I'm not just hanging out with Australians living in a very Australian area. So I think it's really crucial what you said, like, you know, make friends with people who are from there because they can show you like the best places to do X, Y, Z. So I love that advice. And also, like you mentioned that your father is American, and from my stalking of you, I saw that you're quite close with your mother, who looks like a very lovely woman. And is she also creative? Is that how you even, you know, decided I'm going to go down this creative path and study at Parsons? Like, what was your upbringing like? And have your family kind of influenced you getting into in the business that you're in now?
My mother, I'm very close to my mom. She's not really creative, but she always has had a good eye for things. And my father's father, so my paternal grandfather, he was the creative one. He used to do woodwork and make jewelry. So I was exposed to that a little bit growing up. And then my parents also had a factory in India where they made reproductions of antique furniture. So there was wood and stone and brass. So I wasn't really involved in that at all. But I was around like this, like creation, you know, creating stuff. And I get the process of creating and I enjoyed that. But when I think back, I feel like it didn't really have anything to do with them. It was just something that I enjoyed myself. Like as long as I can remember, I loved art class. I loved drawing and building things, actually making things with my hands. So I feel like maybe it was passed down from my grandfather. But yeah, I don't know if my parents influenced me at all. They actually didn't want me to go to Parsons. because they thought that it was like an art school. They're like, what are you going to do afterwards? Be an artist? And so, you know, they thought I'd be painting and then I would not get a job. So they were actually concerned about me going to Parsons.
Oh my goodness. Isn't that funny? It's just everywhere. I did a Bachelor of Arts, like an arts degree, and the same. My parents are like, what are you going to do with that? So yeah, but I actually think these sorts of degrees, like, they give you so much fuel for the rest of your life and just learning about all this stuff. And so what was Parsons like? And, you know, what was it like to be around, I guess, so much creativity and people that really want to explore that as a career?
I mean, I had an amazing time. Most of whatever I learned I'm using now. So it was like an amazing experience. And being around other people who, you know, because coming from an international school in India where, I mean, of course, there were other people in my school who were into art, but then being in an environment where everyone was into art and design was like extremely inspiring and sometimes intimidating. But just being in New York and having all these, you know, access to all these museums and events, and then being with people who were so creative was extremely like just inspiring. And people always ask me like, oh, you were in college in New York. You must have been going out all the time. It must have been amazing. And I said, yes, I did go out, but I didn't go out as much as people thought I was, because Parsons is extremely difficult. Like in terms of the requirements, like if you miss more than two classes in one semester, you fail that class.
Wow.
Okay. So you can't just decide, you know, I'm not going to go to class today. You save your absences for when you're sick. Because if you get sick, then you just have to go to class because you already took 2 days off. So they were extremely strict with attendance. And then the kind of homework we'd get was very intensive. So I'd be working till 2 a.m. and then you'd have to be back in class at 9. And our classes were like 3 hours or 6 hours long. So they were extremely intense. So it was a very intense academic experience, and then also my best friends are all from Parsons. So it was an amazing experience in terms of like design and being, you know, learning about that and being exposed to that in New York, and then also making these amazing friends who have the same interests as me. So, yeah.
Oh, I love that. A 6-hour class. Jeez, that would have been hard. Yeah. I'm wondering also with your business that you're in now, and obviously having gone to a school like Parsons, do the friends that you had from there, have they all gone into creative businesses? And if they have, are they kind of, I don't know, do you keep each other accountable when it comes to your businesses? Have they kind of become business friends as well?
A few of them have started their own businesses. One, like two of them started it almost immediately after graduating, like I did. And then some of the others actually just started in the last two to three years. So I think our businesses are quite separate. We don't necessarily keep each other accountable, but we do help each other. Like if one of us has a warehouse and then someone else needs one, then, you know, we help each other with contacts. And when we need certain things, like even a new accountant, we need a small business accountant, then, you know, we give each other references. So that's amazing to have that kind of support to help each other. And it's not some competition. It's like genuinely helping each other, which I think is so important in any industry. But I feel like sometimes with design, there are people that I've met who are just so secretive about all their resources, and they're not very open to supporting others. But I think it is really important to have this community and support each other. So yeah, I mean, they did go into design, but some have actually switched and changed their careers completely. They said, you know, they had enough at Parsons and they want to do something completely different. So there's been a mix of that as well.
Wow. And I'm guessing that from your travel and just, I mean, even these markets that you're talking about, I can imagine that there's a lot of places for you to source inspiration from. But I love asking, like, designers especially, you know, because they're such a source of inspiration for other people. Where do you source your inspiration from now? Like, are there certain, I don't know, websites that you go to? Are there certain galleries that always inspire you? Is it music? Is it film? Like, where do you seek inspiration?
But being in India, it's, I feel like in terms of color, it's, I get inspired very easily. But then sometimes with the colors that I'm seeing here, they're very like bold and bright and maybe a little too loud. So sometimes I want to use certain color palettes and I'm like, maybe this won't work in a home that's not in India, you know? So then I have to sort of tone it down. But, you know, from Parsons, actually, I became very inspired by architecture. Very like geometric, like Carlo Scarpa and Tadeo Ando, like I love their work and you know, being inspired by their work. And then also like certain movements like the Bauhaus movement and Art Deco and the 80s and the geometric shapes from there. So it's just a mix of things. But when I'm designing a new collection, I don't sort of specifically go looking for inspiration. It's like things that sort of build up, and then I have a lot in my mind, then I start sketching and sort of fleshing out a new collection. I feel like when I'm looking at things for inspiration, I get too influenced, and then I feel like things start looking very similar.
Mm. Oh, no, I love that. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. And I think I remember I was talking to, I think it was Kitia Palaskas on a previous episode, and she was saying, you know, have a look for inspiration, but also, you know, do your own kind of creative work, and that can be inspiration as well. So
yeah,
I really like that idea. And I'd also love to know, I know I keep talking about like your time in New York, but how did you start making these connections? So yes, you know, you had family there and you made some connections through university, but I saw, you know, you've been profiled in media and other such things that, you know, some small business owners that are listening to this and then they go and search for you, they'll be like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. How did you kind of get those things? And was it through connections that you had? Did you put yourself forward for, you know, magazines or media? And do you have any tips for people that are wanting to do something similar and kind of get their word out there about their business?
So when I started, a PR firm had reached out to me initially, and then I worked with them for about a year, year and a half. And they got me into a lot of great magazines and things, but then which was great because it gave me sort of like credibility that, okay, I was featured in this magazine, but that didn't necessarily feel like it was affecting my sales. It was like, okay, great exposure, but not necessarily increasing sales. And then I was introduced to this designer in New York who makes like cosmetic purses and things like that. And I was speaking to her and I asked her for a lot of advice just because she was established and she had this business that she was running on her own. And the advice that she gave, which I followed since then, which has been over, I would say, 8 years. If you work on your craft and your focus and you're making stuff that you love and you're putting it out there, people will come to you. Like, you don't need to reach out and like find, you know, and try to get into places. Like, they will come to you. And that's what I've done. Like, I just I'm so passionate about, you know, designing, working with the artisans, that I put my sort of energy into that. And then all the press that I've got after that and the stores that I'm selling to has been people finding me. So I feel like, yeah, I, you know, like working with PR firm, it is extremely expensive. You know, when she told me that you can just do that on your own, I've just been doing it on my own. And initially I did try, like I would, you know, email stores and try to get into various places, and I just didn't get any traction. And when I just let that go and stopped putting energy there and just focused on, you know, creating the brand and making the product, then the people came. I got the stores that I wanted to be in, you know, they came to me. So I feel like, so that's what I've been focusing on, is just, you know, the product.
Wow. I love that idea. And was it hard to get into that headspace of I just need to keep focused, and if I do a good job and love what I do, people will come? Did you feel like going from the PR agency, like, yes, the financials, obviously it's far cheaper to do it yourself, but was there any kind of mindset shift you had to have to be like, it's okay, I can just do it myself, people will come?
Yeah, definitely. It was really tough to just be like, okay, I'm not reaching out anymore, you know, to people. I'm just going to, you know, focus on the product. It was extremely difficult to just let that go. But then when I saw, you know, things happening, then it sort of, like, there was like proof and evidence that this can work. So then I just continued doing that. I mean, I did, like, I feel like going to trade shows helps, because then, you know, you're sitting in one place and then all the buyers are sort of coming to you. They're, you know, you don't have to reach out to people, they're coming to you. And if your product is there, they get to see it in person and touch it and feel it. And then that has always been a great way to meet people in the press or stores and make connections. Yeah, that has also been really helpful. But again, it was like focusing on the product and then, you know, putting it out there and then people coming to you.
Yeah. Wow. And so with this woman that you talked to, you know, that she gave you that advice, that sounds like, you know, a great kind of mentor to have.
Yeah.
Are there any other kind of mentors, or is there a particular business book, or is there anything that has really helped you build your business? And likewise, you know, even are there technology tools or platforms that you're like, oh, this has just changed the game in terms of the way I run my business?
No, like I actually didn't know who to reach out to when I started. So I just sort of did things, made mistakes, figured it out. Like, I feel like even the PR firm that I work with was like, I'm so glad I did that, because I learned so much, even though it was, you know, very expensive. I feel like just trying different things, and in some ways it might have been extremely challenging or extremely expensive, but then that allowed me to figure things out on my own. So, I mean, of course, it helps to have a mentor. Like, if I could have had one, I would definitely, you know, choose having someone to, like, help me in certain, you know, situations when I would be stuck and not know, you know, like you said, like, which technology to use to make things easier. But at the same time, I feel like all the trial and error that I did on my own was also extremely valuable to learn, like, what works for me, what, you know, what can I, like, I kept thinking I need to hire someone, I can't do photography on my own. But then, you know, when I got the camera, and I also work with a stylist, and then I figured out, oh, I can also do this on my own. It's not something that I can't do on my own. So I feel like, for me, I always feel like trying different things, even if it doesn't turn out the way you want, you learn so much that then you learn something that you can make it work for you. Yeah, I feel like if you can have a mentor, great. If you can't, then just try different things and you will figure out what works for you.
Yes. Oh my goodness. There's this quote by C.S. Lewis that I've used many times, but what you were saying just reminded me so much of this quote, which is, experience is the most brutal of teachers, but you learn, like you learn, because, you know, it is like, it can be a really brutal teacher, but then you've got that experience. You won't go down that same path again in a way. Yeah. And so how long have you been in business now? How many years?
Well, I started actually in 2012. But I started, it was like, yeah. But I really, like, wasn't, like, again, like, I didn't know what to do, how to market and all of that. But I started a small collection at that time. And then I I went to one of my favorite stores in New York called ABC Carpet and Home. Mm-hmm. And they actually placed an order with me for my first collection.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I slowly started to, you know, build it out and find more artisan groups using different techniques, and then, you know, sort of grew the collection like from there.
Wow. And so your 10th birthday this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What are you most proud of from the last 10 years? Like, what are you most proud of in your journey in business?
I feel like the connection that I've made with the people that I work with, that I guess that's the most valuable part of my business, just having these close relationships with the artisans that I work with. Also, just the fact that I have been able to do this on my own. I only have one other person who works with me, and sort of, you know, figuring things out on my own for the most part. I'm proud that I was able to get here on my own.
Yes.
Yeah.
You should be proud of that.
Thank you. Yeah.
If people are listening to this and they're thinking, oh my goodness, I need to connect with her, or I want to stock, you know, her stuff, where is the best place for them to connect with you? And also, what is next for you? Are you going to have a big party to celebrate turning 10?
I wasn't even thinking about it. Like, until you asked me right now, I was like, oh wow, it's been 10 years. So now that I've realized this, I have to plan something big for this year.
Yes.
Yeah. For the summer or fall, I think, because that's when I started out. So I'm going to, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I think I'm going to do something big and fun.
Yeah. And just celebrate. I mean, 10 years, it's huge. Most businesses fail in the first 3 years. So you've tripled that and then some. So yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great to to realize that suddenly, during the podcast, I'm like, wow, it's been 10 years. And in terms of what else that I'm working on, there are a few things that I wanted to expand the product categories that I've been working on with the textiles. And I did that with this latest collection. We added dog beds and some bolsters. We did a bunch of tapestries that did really well, so I want to do a few more. We did introduce some candle holders. I don't know if you saw those.
Yes, I have. I've seen them. They're beautiful with the kind of Art Deco sort of shaping, lines and stuff on them. Yeah.
Yeah. So we did those, but I feel like I'm having a harder time to sort of market those when our focus has been textiles. So on one hand, we would like to add some more products that are not textiles, or also working with artisans in India who use traditional crafts, like the candle holders, but just figuring out how to sort of tie all that in together into the collection, so it's a more full collection for your home, like tabletop and textiles and all of that. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And is the best place to connect with you and find all of this? Obviously, we'll link to all of these in the show notes. Is it best for people to email you? Are you fine for people to contact you on Instagram?
Email is the easiest. I'll get back the fastest if it's through email. It's info@leahsingh.com.
Okay, great. And we'll put your Instagram and your URL, leahsingh.com, in the podcast show notes as well. But thank you so, so much for coming on and sharing your story. And your things are just absolutely beautiful. Your designs and creations are absolutely beautiful. So thank you so much for sharing your business story with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so nice to speak to you and share what I do with all your listeners. Yeah, it was really nice to be here.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, I love that you can randomly come across somebody on Instagram and then have this whole conversation. And then, you know, I'm definitely going to be checking out and buying some of Leah Singh's pieces. And then it's like, you know, then there's a whole story when people come over and you can explain where has this come from and who makes it. And I just love the world. I just love how incredibly accessible everything is. And this is just a reminder of that, this whole conversation. And thank you again, Leah, for coming onto the podcast. I would love to know what you took away from my conversation with Leah. whether you're in homewares, whether you're not, whether you like designing, whether that's not a part of your business. But yeah, I'd just love to know what sort of stood out for you. As always, I'm going to list out two things that stood out for me. There were so many, but I think the two things that really stood out for me was this idea of building connection. And I think Leah talked about that in terms of immersing herself with the local vibe when she travels and, you know, what do the locals eat? Where do they go? What does life really feel like in this city or in this space that I'm visiting? And I think that is just such a beautiful thing. And especially as things start opening up again and people who have, you know, the means can travel and, you know, what an incredible luxury that is. And I think none of us will take it for granted if ever that we did doing it again, especially after the pandemic. But I love that idea of, you know, kind of going off the beaten track and really immersing yourself in a place. And I remember, I mean, this is such an example of not doing it really, is years and years ago, like, my goodness, when I got married, which was 2008, we had a honeymoon in Malaysia and we went to this beautiful little island called Langkawi, and we were staying in this, you know, stunning, beautiful boutique hotel that you would expect on a honeymoon. And the food was just not that great. The food in the like breakfast was beautiful and we had all these different chefs, but in terms of like, I don't know, food that we were going to get in from the hotel to have like room service and stuff, it just wasn't that good. And my husband's family are Indian and we just love like roti and different types of breads. And we love like all sorts of food from different parts of Asia. And we were trying to get that. And it just felt like it was just not very authentic. And it just was like very like sort of Western food. And it was just really, it was not great in the hotel. And I was really surprised. And then on the last day, we sort of just kind of went walking through these different back streets and found this incredible like little hole in the wall kind of place that the locals were eating at. And I was like, this looks incredible. And it was delicious. It was the best food ever. The roti was incredible. The curries were incredible. And we were like, why have we not ventured a little bit further afield? Because if we'd been eating that all week, it would have been so much better. So just that's just one example of like, you know, going off the beaten track and then coming into this incredible, incredible information that you can find wherever you travel. So I love that idea, but also the idea of connection when she talked about, you know, working with the artisans and really connecting with them and not going through an agency and really finding out who they are, what makes them tick, where do they work, how do they work, why are they doing this work, and really building those true relationships and real connections. And I think regardless of what type of work or business that you have, so much of your business success is built on relationships and connections and really having these genuine conversations and communicating with people. That's a huge part of, you know, marketing as well, is to be able to build connections. That's what it is. You're building connections on all sorts of platforms and through different mediums. So I love that point. And the other thing that I loved is Leah talked about her time at Parsons and talking about different movements and Bauhaus. And I think it just reminded me, I am someone who loves to study. I love to, you know, I love it. I always say if I won Tats Lotto, I would literally just be a perpetual student at university for the rest of my life. And I have a huge appetite for learning and education. And I was listening to her talk and I was thinking, you know, we get so much of that in a formal education environment. You know, if you go to school and if you're fortunate enough to then go on and have tertiary education or, you know, in courses and other things that we do. But I think sometimes there's these, you know, incredible movements that really shaped design and shaped part of history and architecture and all sorts of things. And we might have heard about them, but not necessarily have studied them. Maybe we studied something completely different. And yet there's so much out there. There is so much out there that we can learn. And I think sometimes it's about taking that self-initiative and being like, you know what? I've heard a lot about Bauhaus. What is it? How do I learn more about it? Maybe I'm going to go to the library and find a book on it. Or maybe I'm going to, you know, find an expert and read some stuff up about them or watch some things on YouTube about that. I think so often we have so much opportunity to learn and, you know, we spend that time sometimes doing things that aren't so great, like, you know, scrolling social media mindlessly or watching trash TV. I'm putting my hand up because that's something that I do. And there's time for that as well. But I think there's also time for this education and learning. And I loved hearing about, you know, such an incredible school like Parsons. So thank you so, so much, Leah, for coming on and sharing your insights. It's always wonderful to talk to somebody outside of Australia as well. I find that fascinating to just, you know, this is what I love about social media with my love hate, but I love the parts that I love very much includes the accessibility and being able to connect with people all over the world. Same with this podcast. Every time I look at the analytics and I look at the map of the world and all the little spots, and we are on every continent besides Antarctica and people are listening, and it's just absolutely incredible to hear that. So thank you so much, Leah, for coming on and sharing your insights. It's been wonderful to chat to you. And if you would like to connect with Leah, you can do that over at Leah Singh, one word, and that's LEAHSING.com. And if you are on social media, you can find Leah on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. If you follow her on Instagram, or you want to follow her on Instagram, you can find her at Leah Singh Inc. So LEAHSING.com. INC. And of course, we'll link to that in the show notes as well. But yeah, just absolutely beautiful pieces. I can't wait. We're actually working on a renovation at the moment. And yeah, really excited to get one of Leah's pieces in our house. It's just really super beautiful. And oh, I just love it. I love it. I love the whole story behind it. I just think it's fantastic. So we'll link to all of that in the show notes. And if you'd like to check out the show notes, check out more about Leah in text format, you can find that on line at mydailybusinesscoach.com/podcast/194, as this is episode 194. And just a reminder, if you're interested in marketing for your small business, we kick that off, the course and coaching program, on the 26th of April. You can find out all the information over at marketingforyoursmallbusiness.com, or you can find it at mydailybusinesscoach.com/marketing. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. Bye. Thanks for listening to the My Daily Business Coach podcast. If you want to get in touch, you can do that at mydailybusinesscoach.com or hit me up on Instagram at mydailybusinesscoach.